Murphy, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. It is a Friday afternoon, and hey, a reminder, we got Robert Pilot filling in for Matt McNeil coming up at 3 o'clock as Matt is taking the day off. Eric, I got to go to this right now because we don't need any more panic in our society, and I got to call out the weather forecast people. I saw the headline on the Star Tribune, Minnesota could have a few inches of snow on Sunday. And if you actually look at the National Weather Service forecast, there's a 40% chance of like half an inch of slush in the Twin Cities.
I was seeing rain and snow combined. Mm. So,
but of course, you got the Star Tribune and even some of the TV websites putting out, could Minnesota see a few inches of snow in the middle of April? Come on, guys. We don't need to be doing this right now. Science doesn't need to lose any credibility because God only knows we have certain politicians that are going out and attacking scientists right now amid COVID-19. But yeah, don't let the panic.
Yeah, meteorology seems like kind of a loose science, but
yeah,
I'll go with it.
Well, even when you talk about TV meteorologists, I wonder how many of them actually are TV meteorologists.
Very few. I know Paul Douglas is.
Yeah, Paul Douglas for sure is, yeah. Even he was getting in on that, though. It could have been maybe the headline writer getting in on it, though, saying that because he writes the forecast for the Star Tribune, and the headline wrote, ooh, Minnesota could see a few inches of snow, or parts of Minnesota, not pointing out that the metro area likely to get just like a half an inch of slush. So, yeah, don't let that scare you. We might wake up to maybe some brief white lawns on Easter morning Sunday, but likely is going to be all melted by the afternoon because we're in April, and yeah, we're only going to get like a half an inch of slush at the most anyways. Hey, we got open phone lines for the whole hour today on the show, so do welcome your phone calls at 952-946-6205. Let's start off with our roundup on statistics for COVID-19 in Minnesota to get you updated on that information. Confirmed cases, we saw our biggest one-day jump, or one of our biggest one-day jumps. We're now at 1,336, which is up from 1,242 yesterday. Total hospitalizations, 317, up from 293, although only 143 of those people still remain in the hospital. Deaths, unfortunately, we had 7 more, as we are now up 57, which is an increase of 7 from yesterday. Patients in the ICU is at 64. That is an increase of 1 from yesterday. And then patient recoveries is up to 732 from a previous figure of 675. Now, since Minnesota has been one of the better states in the country, if not the best state, at practicing social distancing and keeping our numbers per 1,000 in terms of COVID-19 very low. By the way, if you compare Minnesota to the rest of the states around the upper Midwest, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, if you look at the average number of cases per 1,000, we're actually well ahead of those states. So, yeah, good news there. We're doing some good work with our social distancing, but unfortunately, that hasn't stopped several Republican leaders from around the state getting on board saying that we need to reopen Minnesota because we're doing such a good job.
That's evidence that it's not an actual problem.
Yeah.
If they were doing well.
The analogy I wanted to use, and maybe you can help me think of a better one, is that let's say you own a retail store or a grocery store, and you have a problem with people robbing your store in the middle of the night. Your solution is to put in a new security system. And let's say all of a sudden your break-ins, go down. Well, you wouldn't naturally think since we got rid of all of our break-ins, that means we can get rid of the security system. That doesn't logically make a lot of sense. Now, obviously, it's not a perfect analogy, but the fact that we're doing such a good job is the reason why the numbers have not met the actual forecast in terms of the number of deaths and hospitalizations.
A similar thing that I always think of is when people kind of poo-poo the Y2K bug. It's like, oh, that wasn't a big issue. That, like, nothing ever happened. It's like, well, nothing ever happened because we made a giant deal of it. You know, they were spending years of every single day of the week working on getting rid of this Y2K bug before we had the turnover.
Wow, Y2K, I forgot about that one. But yeah, I remember
a lot of people. It would have happened if we didn't freak out about it.
Yeah, I remember that turned into a spoof for a while, too, in 1999 and even in the early 2000s where people were saying, yeah, look what happened to Y2K. And I think you're right that, yeah, we largely went and solved that problem. By the way, wasn't that the premise of the movie Office Space? The job of Ron Livingston character was just to update software for the Y2K bug, if I remember correctly?
I think that was his job, yeah, and he changed it so like there'd be a rounding error.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, going back, that's a great movie, by the way. I think that actually was his job, was just to solve computer systems that had that data entry error of not being able to move on from 1999 to 2000. But back to COVID-19, we have the Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka tweeting out, Governor Walz expecting up to 5,000 people in the intensive care unit this June. New York State has less than 5,000 people in the ICU today. New York has 19.5 million people to our 5.6 million. We have around 3,000 beds available. We are ready for the surge now. Why shut Minnesota businesses down for a New York-sized surge? Now, there's a number of problems with this tweet that we need to break down, and I think you're ready to do some of these too, Eric, including some factually wrong information as well.
Infect yourself first.
Yeah.
You're the front of the line.
The idea that we're ready for a surge, I don't think anyone wants a surge, because just that you're going to the hospital does not mean you're not going to die. Being on a ventilator certainly can help, but there's still going to be at least about a 3% rate of people who are infected that are going to end up dying. So, yeah, having a surge intentionally certainly is not a good idea. And then you have the idea, too. I'm sorry, I would always err on being too cautious when you have something of a death rate between 3 and 10%, depending on which area of the country or the world you're looking at. Like, for instance, let's say you have a bag of 100 M&Ms, and people told you that 3 of those M&Ms were poisoned. Would you reach in and grab a handful of M&Ms and eat them? I certainly wouldn't if I knew 3 out of the 100 were poisoned. So another analogy you can use there. I do like the response from Governor Tim Walz, though. He said, and there is a little bit of sarcasm in this, too. He said, if the hospital association told me today, Governor, we got it. Send everybody back to work. We got plenty of PPE. We got plenty of doctors. We got plenty of beds. We got plenty of ventilators. We would do it now, but not a single one of them is saying that. Walz continues that if they believe the Mayo Clinic's wrong, if they believe all 9 of the healthcare associations are wrong, if they believe that the CDC is wrong, if they believe that the president's guidance from the administration is wrong, and if they believe 42 other states are wrong, then I value their opinion to say that. But we shouldn't go on a hunch. So, yeah, kind of a nice takedown there from Governor Tim Walz. And by the way, the information in Gazelka's tweet is not factually accurate either when he talks about having 3,000 ICU beds available right now. It's misleading at best, a lie at worst. So let's actually break down that number. So this is according to the Minnesota Department of Health. Right now, the state has an immediate ICU bed capacity of 1,149, and currently 844 of those are in use right now, which means as of today, this minute when we're speaking right now, we only have roughly 300 ICU beds available. Now, we could have another 1,098 ICU beds ready within the next 24 hours, plus another 525 within 72 hours. That would give us a maximum capacity of 2,772. But keep in mind, 844 of those are already in use, and by the way, I would expect that number to increase as the day goes on today. So if we went to maximum capacity within 72 hours, we would have maybe 1,800 to 1,900 beds available, not the 3,000 number that Paul Gazelka is giving out right now.
Paul Gazelka, I think, thought they were bunk beds, maybe. Double stack, you fit 2 on a bed. They're queen size.
I got dibs on the top bed. Yeah, I'm sure people would appreciate that if they're in the ICU. We're going to be putting you on bunk beds. There's also some other things we need to talk about in terms of these statistics. And this is something that I think also gets missed when we're talking about these projections in terms of the number of people who are going to be infected or ending up in the hospital or unfortunately ending up dying. So the point of confusion has to do with this study that was published by the University of Washington that's also been politicized as well, that's predicting at this point 60,000 deaths nationwide. And I think people sometimes get confused on that, that the stats they're bringing up, 60,000 projected deaths, that has to do with what would happen through August 4th, not immediately today. So if people sit there and think, well, we haven't had anywhere near 60,000 deaths today, well, keep in mind that number is projecting the number of deaths as of August 4th, since they're thinking we're probably going to have multiple waves of an infection, which I would agree is probably likely, since as we gradually reopen the economy, you're inevitably going to have a random spike since people are going to be back out and about. So keep that in mind when you hear these number projections, that it's usually based on a later date. In the instance of, again, the University of Washington study, that would be 60,000 deaths nationwide through about August 4th. The Minnesota model, meanwhile, is projecting anywhere from about 6,000 to 36,000 deaths in Minnesota. But important to point out, that is over the next 12 to 16 months, under the assumption that there will be multiple waves of the outbreak during the pandemic. And we've already seen evidence that there have been multiple waves of the pandemic in countries like even China and Singapore, and even Japan have had now their second wave of COVID-19 come on. So either way, I'm always going to err generally towards being too conservative on this, just because at a minimum, you have about a 3% fatality rate. And just going back to the analogy of, yeah, if you're going to have a bag of 100 M&Ms and three of them are poisoned, I don't think I would want to grab in there and take my chances on trying to eat one of those with the chance that one of them could end up poisoned. And then you have this as well. We still don't have a lot of information about who is asymptomatic when it comes to COVID-19, or maybe those who have the virus go dormant for a length of time, because this apparently has been happening in South Korea, where about 51 patients who were originally classified as being cured from COVID-19 have tested positive again. And they're thinking that rather than being infected a second time, that what was happening is that the virus was being deactivated for a short amount of time and then coming back. And this makes some sense from some other reports I've read about even COVID-19 patients in Minnesota. There was one guy who I believe was a doctor that was talking about how the virus is very tricky because it will kind of go in waves, where for a few days you'll have that high-grade fever of like 103. Then for a couple days you'll feel better, you'll think you're on the mend, but then all of a sudden your temperature will spike again. And I think that could be happening with some of these people in South Korea, where it does kind of work in waves. So I would think, if we're going to be trying to reopen the economy, we probably need to learn a lot more about this idea that the virus can go dormant for a length of time. Now, I should point out that this is for a short length of time. It's not like they were retesting them a month later and then finding out that they were reinfected or having their symptoms come up again. This was only, it looks like, about a week or two after they were originally declared clear from COVID-19.
I'd be curious if they were using antivirals for the treatment of those, because I know that antivirals can push diseases dormant while you haven't actually naturally built antibodies to that disease.
Yeah, that could certainly be the case as well. And then who knows, maybe it's even the tests that were faulty in the first place too. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Going to take a break and come back with more news on this, including Major League Baseball. We probably heard about this proposal earlier this week about how Major League Baseball wants to reopen their leagues. This could be absolutely disastrous, but I have a solution if we're really dead set on trying to bring sports back. We'll talk about that and more coming up on FYI Politics.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for more than 25 years. My company has been awarded more than 5 national awards for craftsmanship. You won't find somebody who loves their job more than me. I've devoted my life to my family, my craft, my business, and to the people who trust me with their projects. And I'm happier for doing it. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com to learn more.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything. they really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting their country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join.
Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving their country as well.
I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture.
Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming to diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
You know how it is with vacuum cleaners. You buy them, you break them, then you throw them away, right? Well, not necessarily. Often, fixing your vacuum can be cheaper than replacing it. Ever heard of A1 Vacuum in Roseville? They offer free estimates. So if you wish your vacuum worked like new again, drop by. A1 Vacuum is ready to help clean up your vacuum cleaner act. Find us at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316.
If you're someone that counts on AM 950 to bring you the latest in progressive politics, news, and talk, remember, we can't do it alone. Support our many great advertisers and let them know you heard about their business on AM 950. If you don't know who to talk to, simply write AM 950 on your receipt. AM 950 is supported by small, local businesses, so you're not only helping us and those businesses, but our local economy as well. For a complete list of our sponsors, log on to am950radio.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. All right, I got to talk sports for just a couple of minutes here, and there's a reason why. Because the rumor is that Major League Baseball wants to have all 30 teams play games within the Phoenix area, where they would be quarantined in hotels and play in empty stadiums. The problem with that is that if you look at the size of rosters and staffs on Major League Baseball teams, then you consider the TV crews to broadcast the games, the umpires, the event staff, the people who work at hotels, transportation workers. You would be looking at probably anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 people, probably a lot more than that, having to be quarantined within their own little city within Arizona. And you can see how this would be ripe for problems, because if one person gets infected, just one, there's a good chance everyone else within that little community is going to be infected. And then think of the fact that, well, let's take a hotel worker where the players might be staying. Let's say they go home and infect somebody. Then they can go and infect more people. It's just rife for major, major problems, no pun intended, with Major League Baseball. So they've somewhat modified their proposal, saying that maybe they would divide the league up into two and have 15 teams in Arizona, 15 teams in Florida, because there's 30 Major League Baseball teams. So my thought is, if we're really this dead set on having pro sports, by the way, I think it's a terrible idea to bring pro sports back, especially when we just saw this latest survey from, oh, let me find the company that did this. They were surveying sports fans, and they found that 60% of sports fans won't be comfortable returning to stadiums for months, even after a COVID-19 vaccine. The appetite just isn't there right now to return to stadiums. I suppose people maybe want something to watch on TV, but it's certainly not worth the risk of having the pandemic worsened by having everyone gathered in one little city and then risking that with all these people in close quarters, reinfecting everyone and then possibly infecting even more people, because as I bring up, I don't think you're going to be able to quarantine a hotel staff or transportation workers. They're probably going to go home to their families.
And are the baseball players going to have to sign off on this? I'm sure most of them are not want to go like completely separated from their families.
Exactly. And then there's that too. That number I was bringing up, 5,000 to 10,000, that could increase 3 or 4 times if they are allowed to bring their families to then quarantine with them. And then think about families. If they got little kids, are they really going to want to just hang out in a hotel room for 4 or 5 months? Overall, it's a terrible idea. So I would think if we're really dead set on doing this, fine. You could at least divide up the teams into divisions, because right now there's 6 divisions of 5 teams in Major League Baseball. Fine. If we're really dead set on having these games, then let's have 6 sites around the country. All the teams can play the other teams in their division. So at each site, you would have 5 teams, and they can just play each other for months and months, then have a playoff at the end of the year. But yeah, just trying to gather 30 or even 15 teams in one area, just an absolute horrible idea. So that's the reason I'm bringing this up, because if something goes wrong with this idea of having 15 or 30 teams gathered in one area, the risk of having an infection spread goes up dramatically, because it only takes one case for things to go terribly wrong. By the way, I had to throw this in here too, related to sports, but this apparently, and I find this kind of funny, they wouldn't have dugouts for Major League Baseball. The players would actually be sitting in the stands at least 6 feet apart from each other. So it'd be kind of funny to look at
empty stands.
Yeah, so you'd have empty stands, but players randomly scattered throughout the stands. I don't know. I would find that to be kind of a funny sight, despite what I was talking about just a minute ago.
I mean, it'd be an interesting event.
Yeah. I just find that funny to see like 60 players all scattered throughout the stands, and they all have to sit a few seats away from each other. And by the way, related to that, where sports are starting to resume in Southeast Asia, what I kind of love what they're doing in Singapore with their soccer league down there. They're actually putting cardboard cutouts of fans in the stands to make it look like people are attending the games, to make the optics look a little bit better on TV. I would find that to be really weird, though, if I'm playing in what looks like a full stadium that's silent.
Yeah,
just having like 60,000 cardboard cutouts in the arena, but having no sound come from them whatsoever. That would be really creepy.
Seems like a ton of effort for very little benefit.
Yeah. So you can take a look at the pictures. They're actually kind of funny, as they've been putting either cardboard cutouts or sometimes even mannequins in the stands. Yeah,
just green like screen them into like a volcano or something like that.
So there you go, a little sports update there. But gosh, I certainly hope they change their thinking there with MLB and other sports, because yeah, we don't need all of these teams gathering in one area and then having a pretty significant risk of having the infection end up spreading. All right, let's go to some non-sports related news. Have you gone to the grocery store, Eric, over the past few days, specifically like a Lunds and Byerly's?
Yeah.
You have?
Pretty much every day I go
there. I haven't gone grocery shopping in a few weeks. I've been stocked up for a while, but apparently at Lunds and Byerly's and even some other stores, they've been putting up like plexiglass between cashiers and customers. Have you seen those yet?
I haven't seen them at grocery stores, but I've seen them at gas stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so apparently a number of grocery stores are going to be doing this, where they're going to have plastic screens that are going to be between customers and cashiers. Also going to be equipping employees with gloves, hand sanitizers, and face masks, and marked floors to show customers where to stand and limit how many shoppers can be in the store. That I did see the last time I was there, where they had little arrows pointing to which directions you could walk down the aisles, I guess. The new reality we're living in, but I'm trying to go to the grocery store as little as possible. That seems to be about the worst place you could possibly go in terms of having a risk of getting an infection, just because you're in such close quarters with people. You have folks that are going to be reaching into different parts of the aisles to grab whatever items they're looking for.
Well, during high school, I used to work at a grocery store, and I noticed that even not during the pandemic, but very sick people, like people who would not be out in any other condition or any other place, will make a special occasion to go to the grocery store just because you have to. So you'll occasionally see people like, wow, I never see a person like that out.
Yeah,
it's funny. And they have to go to the grocery store.
It's funny you bring that up. Yeah, I'm sick. Let's go to the grocery store. It's like the thing you said a few weeks ago. What's with it when people are sick or have a disease that, you know what, we need to go board an airplane?
Yeah.
I remember you saying that too.
Tuberculosis just affects the part of the brain. You know, it's a travel bug.
I got a tuberculosis. Time to go on an airplane. I got Ebola. Time to go on an airplane, although I don't think anyone with Ebola is going on an airplane, because that's not a disease you certainly want to get, since basically you have things coming out of both ends until you die, which
is hard to hide.
Yeah, that's hard to hide, and A little nerve-wracking, by the way, that apparently we have a new case of Ebola coming out of, I believe it was the Republican Congo in Africa. So that's the one that has me really nervous. I mean, if there's any silver lining with having COVID-19 is that this pandemic didn't end up being something like an Ebola where the mortality rate is over 50% or something like that.
Well, I think this is why it could spread so easily is because Ebola is so fast and so violent in how it affects people that it's
people
pretty easy to quarantine because it's like, well, if you're not dead in 3 days, you're probably okay.
Yeah, exactly. We might have lucked out in the fact that we didn't have anything that's more deadly than this. In fact, a lot of people were thinking that the next pandemic prior to COVID-19 would have been some sort of flu bug that would have had like a mortality rate around 15 to 20%. Not to say COVID-19 is certainly a good thing, but hopefully this does wake us up for the next time we have a pandemic, because that is more than likely going to be inevitable when you kind of consider how our food system works now, where likely COVID-19 originated from bats, which infected another animal that we ended up eating. And I think a large part has to do with the fact that we continually disturb the habitat of bats, forcing them to move and interact with those animals that we end up eating. So I would think, unfortunately, the risk of having another pandemic is certainly only going to increase in the coming years. When they say this is a 100-year pandemic, I hope people are correct about that, but just the more and more we disturb wildlife habitat kind of leads me to believe that we're probably not going to be done with these types of things over the next 100 years or so. We're probably going to have more of these go on. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Continue on with more news next. Listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
The week. I'm Elizabeth Horub, co-host of Connections Radio Show, and today I'll be letting.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics, and I want to thank you for listening to AM 950. The advertisers you hear are what allows us to stay on the airwaves, and unfortunately, some of them are going to be going through some tough times with the coronavirus. So support our advertisers in any way you can, whether that's ordering takeout food from one of our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants, purchasing gift cards, or just contacting them and telling them thanks for supporting AM 950. Even the littlest thing you can do can go a long way. Find a full list of our advertisers at am950radio.com, and thanks for listening.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pini Gigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
If you have a painting project, you should consider hiring Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration Company. We've been awarded nationally for craftsmanship, are highly professional, responsive, and fairly priced. If you feel overwhelmed by starting a painting project, we make it easy from start to finish. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. There is a difference. Our professionalism sets us apart. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavic.com to learn more.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. With coronavirus, I hope you're holding up well. Thanks for keeping your radio tuned to AM 950. This is a challenging time for everyone, including us here at AM 950. Right now, it's so important to keep AM 950 on the air, ensuring a progressive radio voice is in Minnesota for the 2020 election cycle. The best in progressive talk lives here with Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, Brad Freeman, and, of course, the local hosts like Brett Johnson, Robert Pilot, and myself. To make sure AM 950 keeps broadcasting, we need your financial support now. Head over to am950radio.com and sign up to support with however much you can. Your assistance will help keep AM950 on the air. And Brett and I will be personally thanking listeners who contribute on our shows. Head over to am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. Declare, yes, I want to support AM950. From everyone here at AM950 and from me personally, thank you very much. And thanks for listening to the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
They really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting their country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join.
Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving their country as well.
I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture.
Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
We always do have some smart callers at AM 950, the progressive voice in Minnesota. We just received a call a minute ago reminding us that technically, as we were talking about here, Eric, COVID-19 is not actually the name of the virus. It's actually the disease called by the virus.
Yeah, right? Similar to like HIV, AIDS, yeah. Where HIV is the virus, AIDS is the disease you get from it.
Technically speaking, they are right. It is the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19, which is the disease you get from the novel coronavirus. I think the coronavirus, the specific one that we have, has some technical name. It's like SARS-CoV-2, I think is the scientific name. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but yeah, I do use those sometimes interchangeably, COVID-19 and the coronavirus. But good correction by the caller. Those are technically two separate things.
Lawrence from St. Paul, just to give credit to the smart guy out there.
Lawrence in St. Paul, yeah. He was at our forum with David Schultz back in January when we could actually have social gatherings when we saw Professor Schultz speak. So, yeah, good to meet Lawrence in St. Paul and providing us that information. All right, so technically under the Governor Walz's executive order 2014, it's supposed to be illegal for landlords to evict tenants from their property. Although, unfortunately, a number of landlords haven't been following that protocol, but the Attorney General's office with Keith Ellison has gotten involved to try to prevent these evictions. We'll talk about these stories in just a second. But technically what's under the executive order from Governor Walz is that it is illegal for landlords to take actions to encourage residents to be evicted. That would be like shutting off their power or shutting off their power or shutting off their gas. Attorney General Ellison's office has the authority to enforce the executive order, and additionally, by the way, it's illegal, whether there was this executive order or not, to have a landlord interrupt electricity, heat, gas, or water services to a tenant. So even outside of the executive order, you can't even do that. The disconnection of such services is considered a constructive eviction, which is barred under Minnesota law. Now, even amid a COVID-19 pandemic that hasn't stopped a number of landlords from attempting to do this, in fact, we have two cases in rural Minnesota where this has happened, and the Attorney General Keith Ellison has had to get involved. This is a case that actually was just filed today, and this is out, Meeker County. So what happened was on March 26th, a resident looked out his window and saw the landlord near his home with a large tool. The resident, the phrasing could be a little bit better on that. Anyways, we'll continue. The resident went outside to see what he was doing. And the landlord stated that he was going to shut off the resident's water if the resident did not give him $200. Well, the resident did give him $200 in cash. Then on March 28th, the resident who is not named in this complaint tried to flush his toilet, didn't work. He went outside and found the landlord outside his property, and he stated he was shutting off the water because the resident had not paid the bill. Landlord then stated he needed the resident to give him an additional $200 if he wanted him to turn the water back on. The resident did not have the money right away, so the landlord refused to turn the water back on, and yeah, this goes on and on for a couple of days where it was basically just this landlord harassing this tenant.
Wanting $200 more dollars.
Yeah, wanting $200 more dollars.
No, $200 of course, a flush.
Yeah, and now keep in mind, regardless of the executive order, this is illegal to do. Even if you didn't have the executive order barring evictions, you still can't do this. You can't go and mess with someone's utility bills if you're a landlord. Then we have another case. This one is out of rural Pine County, where Keith Ellison announced that his office has filed an enforcement action against Pine County landlord Howard Mostad for violating the executive order and Minnesota's landlord-tenant laws. The tenants were sheltering in place at home with their four-year-old daughter, who, by the way, has an underlying health condition that makes her especially vulnerable to COVID-19 exposure. The AG's office is seeking emergency relief from the court to restore the tenants' utility services and prevent the landlord from interfering with their continued residency during the peacetime emergency. So a couple of stories there about, yeah, having some not very good landlords.
Yeah, I've definitely had landlords shut off utilities on me.
Really? They've done that to you? And that is, by the way, technically not legal, regardless if there is an executive order or not.
Yeah, not even to necessarily evict me. It was over around Christmas, and I came back to my apartment freezing cold. Says, oh, I thought everyone was going to go home for the winter.
Really?
What the hell are you talking about?
I thought everyone was going to go home for the winter.
Just got a hunch.
And see, that's what makes the landlord-tenant relationship really complicated, because I've had experience with this too. You've had experience. There are a lot of crappy landlords in the world. Also, there are a lot of good landlords. Now, okay, I'm not going to make the argument, not all landlords. No, I'm not making that argument right there. Here's why I'm bringing this up, though. So let's say you're in a situation right now, or you have a number of your residents in your building who can't afford to pay their rent. I would first off go and talk to your landlord and see if they can give you any sort of concessions or a delay in your rent. Because really, a landlord should be expected to do that, because they should have to bear the brunt of this too. It shouldn't be only the tenants that have to bear the brunt of what's happening when you're having an economic crisis like we're having right now. I would caution, or I would say to do that, to try to negotiate something. Now, obviously, if you have a landlord that's going to be steadfast on not giving you any sort of concessions, yeah, absolutely go ahead and do a rent strike.
Yeah, because I might try to even talk to your landlord. Maybe talk to the other tenants first, see if you have
some
other
those
people
too. Absolutely, yeah. You'll certainly have more power doing that, and then you can go as a group and talk to your landlord. Because if you do go with a rent strike, it probably will be effective. Because if you think of how the market is going right now, a lot of people are going to have trouble affording apartments. And if you have a landlord that's going to decide to play hardball with you and they're going to evict everyone that's participating in a rent strike, yeah, good luck trying to go ahead and try to get those apartments occupied again. But the reason why I would always say try to talk to your landlord is this reason, is that I have some experience working in the property management industry. And the last thing you want is to, let's say you have a landlord that is willing to negotiate with you on your rent and give you some concessions. The last thing you want is for them to lose their building and then have it taken over by a big corporation that ends up being in charge of your rent. I have some experience with this, and a lot of times they're not going to give you any sort of flexibility whatsoever. In fact, in the last apartment I lived in, I was on time paying my rent for 36 straight months. Now, I happened to be out of town one day working an event out of town for one of my streaming business, and I forgot to pay my rent online. Fine, whatever. I came back, and it was the third of the month. Technically, if you pay the third of the month or after, you end up getting fined, and you have to pay a little bit of a late penalty. So I went through to my landlord and said, all right, well, I've been on time for the past 36 months. Can you waive the penalty? No, it's corporate policy. And then I remember talking to them, too, when I was trying to renew my lease. I was saying, well, how are you coming up with your rent increases? They couldn't tell me. It was a large corporation that owned the building. It all goes through an algorithm that's determined by corporate. So I would just point out, the last thing you want is, yeah, a large corporation to run your building, because they likely have corporate policies where they can't negotiate concessions or a delay in your rent. They have to go with whatever corporate policy technically is. So I would just caution that you're probably better off in some cases with having a smaller landlord that's not a large business running your building. But Obviously, yeah, if you have someone who is going to be playing hardball and threatening to cut off utilities or saying that you have to pay your rent in full or we're evicting you, I would say, yeah, by all means, call them out and go with a rent strike and try to call them out, because ultimately, everyone should have to bear the brunt of what's happening with this economic crisis, both the tenants and the landlord. It shouldn't just be one of those parties that has to bear the brunt of it, because, yeah, if you just say the landlord, well, everyone needs to pay their rent in full, well, the landlord's sitting there just fine financially. But guess what? Your tenants don't have any income. So I would say, yeah, try to work out a deal with your landlords. I don't know. Does that make any sense right now? I've just been I've seen a number of corporations that run these types of buildings all over the country, and they gobble these things up, and things end up in a worse situation. But I also get, there are a lot of bad small-time landlords as well.
I think that you probably have a pretty good idea of the character of your landlord, so you can kind of feel it out.
So I would just automatically say that, yeah, if you're, I'm going to go on a rent strike and do this right away, I would first off, especially if you have a landlord who is an individual and not one of those large corporations, see if they're willing to make a concession. And to take your advice, Eric, I would first off, yeah, talk to the other tenants as well, because it's similar to how a union bargains. There's strength in numbers.
Yeah, I've had landlords where if they get a hint that I don't plan on paying, they'll be like, okay, well, I'm going to come up with an excuse to get you out of here as soon as possible.
Right, exactly. So I would certainly come up and say, yeah, go together as a group, talk to your landlord, and see what type of deal you can come up with them to get concessions or delay in rent. And like I was saying, if they're going to play hardball and say, we're not going to budge whatsoever, well, the leverage is likely on your side, given the current market, that being good luck to them trying to find new tenants in their buildings. Hey, let's talk to Jimmy in Vadnais Heights, who wants to chime in on some of the topics we've been talking about today. Jimmy, what's on your mind? Jimmy, did we lose you?
Technique and everything, too. It's really good. We could use more money that we use on war and weapons and try to find problems that will solve these problems with these diseases, cures and vaccines and things like that. Spend more money on that type of thing.
I missed at the beginning of what you were saying there, Jimmy. I don't think we had you quite potted up. Can you state that one more time?
Sure. That we spend more money to try to cure these diseases than we do on war and weapons. You know, divert the money to this research problem to try to solve these problems and save lives.
Mm-hmm. I got you. All right. Thanks for the call there, Jimmy. Yeah, we could divert some of the money we spend on war and other things to, researching disease.
I mean, think about how much we spend on aircraft carriers.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not really protecting people as much as a vaccine would at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And even when we try to bring in some of those military ships and hospital ships to help out. Yeah, that one in New York, the U.S. Comfort has, 40 patients on a 1,000-bed ship, so even that's not necessarily a good solution either. So appreciate the phone call there, Jimmy. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Got one final segment left in the show, and we'll do that coming up next. And keep in mind, got Robert Pilot filling in for Matt coming up at 3.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can save money with All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that it's too expensive and you need lots of money down. The truth? Solar is available for little or no money down. And if you have a great site for solar, you might even save money right away on a monthly basis. So don't wait to switch. You'll see your investment pay off the sooner you switch to All Energy Solar. So start saving today and visit allenergysolar.com.
The British are coming! The British are coming! The British are coming! Hey, you there! I'm Paul Revere. The British are coming! Where is everyone?
Ben Franklin dispatched the evacuation warning on Facebook. Didn't you get it?
Hi, I'm Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If your marketing is behind the times, contact us today online at socialmediamn.com or at 763-244-4058. We can help your business message get dispatched and selected on social media and Google search. We offer uncomplicated, results-driven, and affordable internet marketing solutions for businesses of all sizes. socialmediamn.com or 763-244-4058.
I'm attorney Rachel Schroman of Schroman Law, and I've got you covered. I provide trusted legal advice in wills and trusts, supplemental and special needs trust, powers of attorney, health care directives, probate, financing long-term care, medical assistance planning, and prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. These are areas of law that are intensely personal in nature, and I don't take the responsibility of providing counsel around such issues lightly. Learn more at schromenlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Hi, I'm Matt McNeil, and I want to encourage you to join me weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. for The Matt McNeil Show. It's a Twin Cities-based full hour of talk where we discuss what's going on in the state and in the nation from a Minnesota perspective. We'll be joined by a lot of great guests, and we'll take your phone calls. Interact with us on the Twitter page, at Matt McNeil Show, the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, The Matt McNeil Show, and on email, comment at am950radio.com. The Matt McNeil Show, weekday afternoons at 3, right here on AM 950.
Hello, Minnesota. This is Governor Tim Walz. Among all the things I love about our great state, it's the hardiness of our people and our willingness to do right by each other. We need that now more than ever. My team is working hard with partners to keep you safe, but we need all Minnesotans to help slow the spread of coronavirus. Stay home, stop the spread, save lives. For the most accurate and up-to-date information, listen to your local news, and together, let's share facts, not fear.
Eric, I swear, you and Patrick must be closet fans of The Apprentice. You guys have a little thing for playing that song, Money, Money, Money. The old
I do
theme.
Love it.
You do love that song, yeah. Fortunately, it was ruined by Donald Trump after he decided to run for president. Hey, let's go with some rapid-fire headlines here before we wrap up the show today. So, you may have noticed gas prices are way down, including some gas stations in Lake City and Red Wing that are reporting gas prices of 78 and 84 cents, respectively. Have you seen any of those prices yet below a dollar where you've been?
I've not seen below a dollar, no. I thought below 150 was crazy enough.
Yeah. Well, apparently, don't get used to it, as apparently we now have an agreement between Russia and Saudi Arabia to stop their price war, as they were having meetings earlier today, although there could be one snag. Mexico declined to support the agreement, and meeting participants acknowledged in a statement that the final agreement is conditional on the country's consent. What I find funny about this, though, do you remember a few weeks ago when Trump tweeted out that Russia and Saudi Arabia are close to an agreement on the oil price war? And it ended up actually raising the stock market by a few hundred points. Turned out at that point, it wasn't real whatsoever. He largely had made it up. But apparently, this agreement is real, conditional on whether Mexico decides to go with this agreement with OPEC. But what would happen is that it would cut the supply in oil, which in theory would raise gas prices. So yeah, if you've been enjoying those gas prices of less than $1.50, they're probably going to increase within the next few weeks or months. How about this? I didn't think about this much walking around towns like Minneapolis and St. Paul, but apparently St. Paul has been rethinking their use of crosswalks, because if you think of how crosswalks works, you have to press that little button to trigger the crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently in Minneapolis, they've now set all of their crosswalks to be on automatic timers, so people no longer have to touch those buttons. But St. Paul is considering a similar ordinance so people don't have to manually touch the button and then, in theory, lead to a risk of infection.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I never really thought about that. Yeah, how you have to touch that crosswalk. I guess a number of people do have to touch that throughout the day, so could, in theory, reduce the risk, although
I'm still going to touch the button, even if I know that it's automatic.
Yeah, at least touch it with your sweatshirt or something like that. But the only downside, though, is that if you're in a car, or even if you are someone who's walking, is that the automatic timers, I'll just say, are not always that well-timed, or you can be waiting at an empty intersection for, like, upwards of a minute waiting for that stupid light to change. And apparently, I heard, too, when you try to change the technology and the timers on those things, it's apparently a really complicated task. It's not as simple as someone just opening up a little box and adjusting a clock. Apparently, it costs a lot of money to do that.
Yeah, a lot of cities have their entire road system synced up,
mm-hmm.
so as to hypothetically at least you wouldn't hit many red lights. You know, it doesn't always work, but that's the idea.
Yeah, exactly. How about this? Out of Milwaukee, Foxconn Technologies is joining forces with Medtronic to build medical ventilators at its facility in Mount Pleasant. So Foxconn, despite getting all of that taxpayer money in Wisconsin and then largely doing nothing with those facilities that they promised to have hundreds, if not thousands, of employees staff, at least they're getting on board for doing something now. So, hey, is that taxpayer money we use to fund Foxconn? Well, not we. Fortunately, it was only the residents of Wisconsin. But if you live over there, maybe you're getting a little bit of a bang for your buck. But either way, those facilities are still largely open, even though at the time when Foxconn struck that deal with former Governor Scott Walker, they were projecting hundreds and thousands of jobs that, never ended up materializing. Go with another rapid-fire story. This one I find kind of interesting out of West Virginia. It doesn't really have anything to do with COVID-19. But apparently, West Virginia appears to be poised to become the first state in the country that would allow gambling on politics, a move that would let people turn their Trump versus Biden predictions into cash. The West Virginia Lottery, which oversees betting in the state, said on Tuesday that officials initially approved a plan to let, I don't know if I'd want these guys running political betting, FanDuel and other sports bookers offer political wagers, but needed time to fully work through the implications and research it further. So yeah, there you go. You could technically make predictions and maybe even make a little bit money on Biden versus Trump or other political races. What could possibly go wrong with legalizing political betting and then letting FanDuel run it?
Aren't all those companies run out of like Barbados also?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
I know a couple people who have, bet on those sites and then they won something. Oh, good luck getting it out of there.
They actually won on FanDuel? Because I heard for the large part, you don't actually win on those things when you're on FanDuel. Well, what's the other one?
There's like DraftKings.
DraftKings. DraftKings is the other one. Yeah.
Well, they technically won, but good luck getting the money.
Yeah, good luck actually getting your cash.
So I guess they lost.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of red tape that you have to jump through in terms of trying to get your money that you potentially win from FanDuel. But, oh boy, what could possibly go wrong with legalized betting on political gambling, especially if you maybe have an election official that decides to put something into FanDuel where they want one candidate to win?
And with how easy we know it is to hack those machines.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds far-fetched and kind of funny, but imagine if you're, let's say, the Secretary of State of West Virginia, and you bet a certain amount of money that, let's say, Trump will beat Biden by 15 points in your state or 17 points in the state. Well, let's say the results come back and it shows Trump only beat Biden by 14 points. Yeah, well, there could be a little temptation to maybe fudge those numbers so you
Some
can
Some hanging chads that you've noticed?
Yeah, so you can go make sure that you cover your spread. Of course, that's an extreme example talking about the Secretary of State. I'm sure they would probably bar someone like that from doing it. But what if you talk about a local election official or someone who's just a random person at a polling place that bets on these things?
You want to see foreign powers or just foreign individuals try to interfere in our election. Let them bet on it.
Yeah, you could imagine how things could go wrong in a hurry. So we'll see what happens. West Virginia allowing political gambling. I guess if there's any silver lining in that state is that largely it's most elections in that state are pretty well determined, being that it's gone very Republican in the last few years. But could have some gamesmanship when you're trying to play with covering the spread or making sure you get the margins predicted correctly. That's all the time we got for today. Hey, make sure you stay tuned. We got Robert Pilot filling in for Matt McNeil. That's on the way next on AM 950.